Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, today on the Local News Hour, rather than separate candidate interviews this time around, I've got all three candidates are running for on their primary ballot for the Park City Board of Education Precinct Number 2. I've got Andrew Kaplan, Catherine Callow-Huser, and Peter Yogman joining me. Park City School Board Precinct 2 represents the Highland Estates, Northern Park Meadows, Ranch Place, and Snyder's Mill neighborhoods. The seat now occupied by Nancy Garrison, who has decided not to run for re-election. Good morning to all of you, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So I have asked you all to come prepared with 60-second opening statements. Let's go alphabetically. Andrew, you're up.
Sure. Good morning. So my name is Andrew Kaplan. I'm a parent of two children here in the district. My oldest child is entering kindergarten this fall, and my youngest is a year and a half old, which means my kids are going to be in the district for the next 16 years. I'm the only candidate running in District 2 with children in school. My motivation to serve is clear, to push this district to new levels for my children and for all the children here in Park City. Professionally, I'm the CEO of an investment banking firm, and in this role, I manage policy and budgeting issues on a daily basis. In the community, I'm active in nonprofits, currently serving on the board of the Park City Film Series and on the board of the Park City Education Foundation, where I manage the foundation's excess cash and endowment. I'll bring both my professionalism as a manager as well as my passion for this community to the school board. Regarding policy, I'm a strong supporter of capital improvements to our schools and think we need to resolve the overcrowding in the schools as well as the growth of our student population ASAP. I feel strongly that dual language immersion should remain a key policy in our district and that if there are any changes to the program, it should be expansion rather than contraction. I feel that PC CAPS as well as CTE programs should be expanded and not contracted. And these programs are one of the things that help make Park City special. Thank you.
Okay. Catherine?
Hi, I'm Kathy Callow-Huser. The only educator currently sitting on the school board is retiring, and I think voters need to ask themselves if it's important to have an educator on the school board. An educator understands the inner workings of school systems and the needs of schools, teachers, and students in a way that those who have established other careers cannot understand. I believe an educator's perspective is crucial to school board decision making. Currently, I'm the only educator on the ballot. Additionally, I'm an evaluator and a statistician. I design evaluations, surveys, and methods for gathering data, and I analyze data to determine findings. Many of the current issues facing the school board need data gathered from a variety of sources to inform decision making, and I think I'm an important cog in that process. Furthermore, it's crucial that good communication and the right questions inform decision making, and that exemplary listening skills are used to hear the concerns of Park City residents and families who need a voice in the educational system. I have the skills needed to fill an important niche on the school board and bring an educator's perspective. I hope you'll vote for me.
Okay, and Peter Yogman.
Hi, thank you, Leslie, for having us. I'm Peter Yogman. I'm the candidate who's been here 21 years and had two children go through the Park City school system. I've talked a lot about process today. I want to talk about three issues: facilities, teachers, and leadership. We all know we need additional and improved facilities, and the sooner the better. Just like to point out, I'm the candidate that figured out how to get the ninth grade moved at least a year sooner without a bond, how to get the middle school, the 7-8 school, started as soon as we moved to ninth grade without a bond. And I've been the one who did the research that favors the K-6 school. Our teachers are at a tipping point. If we lose faith, the faith of our teachers because they don't feel valued and not part of the process, you know, we really risk losing everything. I think we're in a good position because all candidates are in favor of doing something for teachers. I think what we really have to be careful of now is not redividing this community by making promises to teachers that we may not have the ability to keep. We can't divide teacher from teacher, and we cannot divide teachers from the community. Let the teachers tell us what they need, and let's build a community consensus. And finally, we had a bond that failed by a vote of 60-40. So our goal is not to get a bond on the ballot. Our goal is to get a bond passed with substantial community support, which means we have to come together as a community around our schools. And this is done by having a process that leads to a consensus around priorities. And I think I'm the person with the leadership to be able to do that.
Catherine, I want to ask you, I mean, Andrew made a big deal about he's got kids in the school district. You don't. How important is it to have a kid in the school district to be a good board member?
Well, I think the voters would have to answer that question. It'll be their perspective that counts. But I'm an educator. I have worked at the state level. I've worked in schools. I think that brings a unique perspective to the district. I have raised four kids in Cache and Logan districts. I know what Utah experiences as educators.
All right. And Andrew and Peter, I mean, she touts the fact that she's an educator. How important do you think that is that we have somebody like that on the board? Andrew?
Yeah, I think it's important to have a diverse set of opinions and backgrounds on the board. And we certainly have people with educational background on the board. You know, certainly the superintendent has that. Is it essential? No. Is it important to have diverse backgrounds? Absolutely.
And Andrew? Oh, excuse me, Peter.
No, I think it's nice, but we have two PhDs already in the administration. We have many other members with masters in education. I'm not sure that it really adds the diversity that we're talking about, but if I was not running, I could vote for either of these candidates, on the other hand.
We heard a lot about facilities from all of you. How did you vote in favor or against the $56 million school bond that was on November's ballot? Andrew?
Sure, I voted in favor of it, and I didn't think that it was perfect. I think I had a lot of the same concerns as people who were vocal against it, specifically around the athletic facilities. But when I looked at it, I said, okay, the incremental cost to my family is, you know, $150 a year, and I felt that that was worth it. I'm a strong believer in the schools. I think we need to spend more money than we're spending right now. And I looked at the facilities, and I know that we need new ones, right? And I know that we have overcrowding at the elementary schools. And it's a shame that, you know, we live in a community like Park City, and we have kids in trailers outside of the elementary schools. And we need new buildings. We need to, you know, spend money. And it's a great time to raise a bond. Interest rates are low, and from a financial perspective, it's pretty much perfect timing.
So. How did you vote on the bond, Peter?
I voted against it. I thought our priorities were upside down. I thought the process was broken. And I think that since the bond was defeated, the process has been greatly improved. For instance, the move to Dozier Field was made essentially behind closed doors. And we have the testimony of a high administrator talking exactly about how that process was broken. And we have to remember, if you're going to spend $5 million on a new football field, that's just not spending $5 million. When you make a choice for something, you're making a choice against many other things. And we never arranged our priorities around our spending. So was anything wrong with football? No. But that $5 million, for instance, could have been spent in many other areas that could be more important to the community. And that's why the process is so important.
Yeah. Still, when you think about $5 million being spread out amongst the district taxpayers, that's not a lot of money.
Right. But then that's $5 million that wouldn't be spent on expanding CTE unless we go back for more money from the taxpayers. So, look, we have to look every taxpayer in the eye and say, we need more money for schools, but we're operating intelligently and efficiently, and I want to build that consensus that says, if we're going to ask you for more money, that we have done our job.
And Catherine, how did you vote?
I voted against it. As I talked to friends, neighbors, and colleagues, I felt the division was too strong. And I felt that we hadn't gotten enough good information, that priorities hadn't been established in ways that convinced the community that the bond was needed. I think that there needs to be better communication, more input from the community, and a better decision-making process to decide the priorities. And I felt the timing wasn't right. I felt that it needed to go back up for more discussion and potentially come up for a bond election later.
All right. So all three of you do agree, though, that bond needs to be approved here in the next year or so?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and is it going to be any different than $56 million, Catherine?
Well, I think that there needs to be a close look at what the needs are, what the priorities are. I feel strongly that the money that we bring in needs to go into instruction. If instruction is supported well by facilities, then I think that that's an important need. But they've got to work together to establish their priority and decide where those funds need to go.
Yeah, but certainly you know you cannot mix that money. It's capital and it's M&O, and they come from different, you know, levies. So.
Absolutely.
I mean, to say that you're approving a bond to improve education, no, it's only improving facilities, right?
Right. And facilities clearly have an impact on education. There's no question. But I think that, I mean, most schools in the state do have trailers. Is that detrimental to instruction? Not necessarily.
Yeah. And Peter, in terms of let's talk a little bit about facilities. I want to move on to that. You had said that you were the one that supported a new K-6 school. So
right.
On a new bond, that's what you would push for?
Yes, but remember, the first thing you have to do is create community consensus around that. So I would reestablish a committee, just like we have reestablished a committee for the high school to look at the pros and cons. When we pushed the 5-6 school on the community, I'm not sure we had the kind of input that we needed. And I don't think we educated the community on the pros and cons. So when we do that, I think that when you look at the research, that a K-6 school is better for the community, and I think it's better for students, and it's better for student behavior. And I think we ought to make that argument and re-examine that.
How do you feel about the K-6 versus 5-6 discussion that's going on now, Andrew?
Sure. I think that what's very important to me is dual language immersion in that part of the curriculum. And in talking to teachers and administration as well as parents, what's very important to parents, especially in our district of Trailside and Parley, is that dual language immersion continues. And I think right now the best way for that to continue in the curriculum is to have a 5-6 school, to be able to continue having half-day French, half-day Spanish in that 5-6 school. And so, you know, from my perspective, it's important. Is it the perfect? Is it the be-all, end-all? Maybe not. But versus, you know, with the choices that we have right now, I would support the 5-6 school, and I would also support getting the bond very quickly. Would it be $56 million? Probably not. I would separate out the athletic bit from the school facilities, but I would support building another elementary school. I think we have to be honest with ourselves that the district has grown. It is continuing to grow. There is more building. There are more families moving here. When you talk to the PTO reps, you do school tours at our schools, especially at the elementaries, there are families moving here from all over, from New York, Texas, California. That's not going to change. We live in a great place, and we need more schools.
So, Kathy, how do you feel about the issue of 5-6 versus K-6?
The research would support any configuration that has strong leadership and strong community support. So I think that when we as a community decide which configuration is the best to meet the community needs and put our backs behind it, we can make any of those configurations work. I've been working with Cache District as a state representative to move 6th grade into the elementary schools, and it's much more of a headache than they realize. The costs are extensive. As soon as you take a 6th grade English language arts teacher and put them in an elementary school, they have to teach math, science, and PE also. And for those teachers, it's been really a stretch to have to move back into an elementary school and teach all subjects rather than just the subject they've been comfortable with for 20 years. We have lots of veteran teachers in this school district that moving from 6th grade middle school to elementary school will be challenging for.
All right. So I didn't get you're waiting for more answers on that. I didn't get really a clear-cut answer in terms of what you support.
I would support the configuration that best fits the community needs. I don't think it's a research-supported effort to go one way strongly or the other. It's a community-supported and leadership-supported need.
All right, well, let me throw this out here, and maybe that changes your mind, because I've heard unless we build a 5-6 school, we will no longer have dual immersion. So how important is dual immersion to you in the future?
As a parent, I would definitely want dual immersion. I think we need to look at the data. I'm not sure that dual immersion is doing our students who speak another language a good service. So I think we need to look at that. As a parent, I would choose dual immersion. We may need to have different configurations for that. So given if we're talking dual immersion, and that's one of the pros for a certain building configuration, as a parent, I'd vote for that. As an educator, I would want to make sure that we aren't hurting any of our students.
And Peter, given your support for a K-6 school, knowing that just, you know, bringing this out, I mean, if in fact that would do away with the dual immersion program in 2 years, would you still stand by a K-6 school?
I do not see why it would do away with the dual immersion. We're doing dual immersion right now in the elementary schools. If we add another grade, we might have some teacher issues, but we can make that work. There's too much research that shows that when you create large cohort schools and you take kids out of their neighborhoods and take parents out of schools by putting a large school at one end of town, that you're going to damage academics, you're going to damage behavior, and you're going to break down the importance of the neighborhood school that makes this community cohesive. And I think those things are really, really important. It's what makes Park City, Park City.
Yeah, and I think about neighborhood schools, though. I mean, they're not like what you and I grew up with, where we could walk to school on our heels if we needed to. I mean, it was, now kids have to be bused. We haven't built the schools in areas currently that kids can walk, except for maybe some in Parley's and some at McPolin.
My kids rode their bikes, so it was okay. That's Park City, too. And we do have neighborhood schools. I mean, we have Jeremy, Parley's, Trailside, McPolin. Yes, we're starting to bus kids longer distances, but a lot of that is to create this kind of balance between Spanish-speaking kids and English-speaking kids. And it's, I think we still do have neighborhood schools. I was in the schools a lot. And if we had a large school at one end of town, I think parents being involved in schools is critical. And I think this is going to reduce that opportunity.
Let's talk a little bit about grade realignment. About 10 years ago, we were realigned to grades 6 and 7, 8 and 9, and 10 and 12. Now we're unaligning, it seems like. How is it going to work to have 8th grade out perhaps at Ecker when many of those students may need to access some of the higher level classes only offered at Park City High School? Is that a parent's responsibility, Kathy?
Well, I think we've got to, as a school district, provide access to those opportunities for kids. So is it a parent responsibility? No, I would say it's a school district responsibility to make sure those eighth graders have access to the courses they need.
Even transporting them?
I think that even transporting them. We have a bus system in place. Transporting students between schools during the day is not insurmountable. You've got timing issues, so I think that those have to be carefully considered. Scheduling can be a nightmare.
How about for you, Peter? In terms of how we get eighth graders perhaps to some of the upper level classes at the high school?
I think it's a matter of having the right teachers in the 7-8 school. So it's more critical for the ninth graders who are actually taking AP classes. I think there might be a very few advanced eighth graders that require that, and we're just going to have to work with those few kids individually.
Andrew, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's somewhat impractical to bus students across town during the school day. I think it takes too much time back and forth. I think that, that's one of the disadvantages of the grade realignment. But again, I think that there should be, honors track in the eighth grade and, where applicable, perhaps helping to schedule some of those AP classes either at the beginning or the end of the day to make that possible for some of the younger students.
Peter, do we need a learning center, or should those students be incorporated into the high school?
You know, I had a good talk with Lindsay Huntsman, and she really thinks that it's important for them to be separate. And I'm going to take her experience on that. I also think that when we expand a real career technology pathway, that those kids will need different facilities, and we will incorporate career paths for kids who aren't going to college with an academic program that will prepare them also to be good citizens and maybe even circulate them back into the mainstream.
Okay, Andrew, how do you feel about that learning center? I mean, should we keep it separate, or I think the plan is to incorporate it into the newly remodeled high school?
Yeah, I mean, look, my view is that in speaking to parents, that the learning center should remain. I think that parents who have children there love the teachers, love the instructors, and that's been somewhat consensus feedback. And frankly, I think that somewhat as Peter said, we should be expanding programs, not contracting them. And this is a special community. We have a very diverse student population with diverse needs, and I don't think the way to help the majority of students is try to make everyone fit into the same mold. I think we all have to acknowledge that we have various, academic backgrounds and various socioeconomic backgrounds in town here, and people need, different things in school. And fortunately, we have a community which supports that, and we should continue to support it. I don't think, the answer is just to get rid of programs and throw everyone back into one big pot.
Okay, and Kathy?
I agree. I think that there's a need for having at least a separate building if it's on the same campus, but certainly a separate building structure. I think the needs of different students, again, vary, and I think that having the separate building supports some needs that won't be able to be served if they're in the same building. We talk about this district being big and access to different things being far apart, but really this district is small, both geographically and in student numbers. And if we think about how small the reach is of this district geographically, I think we can accommodate various needs of students without having to be concerned about the fairly short distances between places.
Andrew, let's move to you. The achievement gap is a popular buzzword. How do you define achievement gap, and why is it important that we lower it?
Well, I think we have a very diverse, student population. From a socioeconomic standpoint, we have 22% of students on free and reduced school lunch, which I think is shocking to a lot of people here in Park City. And, you know, we have, you know, on the high end, very high achieving AP students in our high schools. And then on the low end, we have people who, you know, fall behind very early and never really have the ability to catch up. And that's one of the things that, you know, our diversity here in town is one of the things that makes it great. But I think, again, we need to recognize that and add more programs, right? We need to be, you know, there's some great programs that exist, Latinos in Action, you know, some of the mentoring programs at the middle school, et cetera. And I think we need to support and encourage that. And I think we also have to recognize that people aren't starting out equal, right? I mean, you know, the community has done a lot. PC Tots, I think, is a great start. Full-day kindergarten is a great start. We're moving in the right direction, but we need to continue to support it, and we can't let it fall off. I think, you know, my one criticism of the school district, you know, is not communication or any of the kind of buzzwords that we've been hearing this whole time. I think it's that we too often have we implemented programs and then kind of let them fall off to the wayside and not had a clear direction over the long term. And, you know, whether it's been, you know, the baccalaureate program or, you know, now dual language immersion is wobbling, I think it's, we need to stick with it. And I think, you know, the achievement gap is the buzzword, but really it's starting it at the preschool level and continuing to build and support our students at all levels.
So, Kathy, I mean, why is it important that we lower it? I mean, it is what it is.
It's not necessarily what it is. We would expect our affluent kids to be very high-performing kids in this district, and they certainly raise the average. But what bothers me the most is our non-English-speaking students, our students who come from non-English-speaking homes, are far below the state average for non-English-speaking students. We, as a district with the kind of money and resources we have, I think need to look at that and at least expect our non-English-speaking students to be at the state average for those for that group of students or above. If we aren't aspiring to that, I think we're setting up a case where crime will increase, kids will become disenfranchised, our dropout rates will go higher. I think we need to address that and at least ensure that those kids have the opportunities to meet or beat the state average for the same groups of students.
We have invested millions and millions of dollars, though, into our English language learners.
Sure.
Over the years.
Sure.
I mean, this is, I mean, we have an entire generation of school kids going through our program. So are we doing something wrong if we...
I question allocation of resources when I work with districts in this state that have non-English-speaking families whose kids are performing above the state average, and they are the same kinds of demographics that we have here. The kids are at home alone. Parents are working multiple shifts. It's, again, a very similar demographic. I think that allocation of resources needs to be looked at. When I see other districts doing it that have much fewer resources than Park City, we should be able to do it, too. So I'm not criticizing teachers. I'm not criticizing the system. I think that we just need to look closely at the data, where we allocate resources, what programs we're using, and make sure that those kids have opportunities to bring them up to at least the state average for students who don't speak English.
Peter, do you have any ideas for reducing the achievement gap?
Yes. There's two things. For one, we now have really good data out of Granite School District on their preschool program, and the results are really unbelievably good. Sometimes you can get kids to be... show improvement from beginning of year to end of year, but then it fades out by the second to third grade, and they're showing improved results all the way through the sixth grade. So a well-designed preschool program using the latest understanding that we have appears to be a very good thing, and we're modeling our preschool on Granite. The second thing we can do, and I've talked to people who have tutored over 200 Hispanic kids, and you look at things like the Harvard Family Research Center, is what really counts is having parents involved in the kids' education, making sure they go to school, that they get their homework done, that they're motivated, that they have high expectations. So this is why I really think, and we can talk about how to finance this, we need to bring the Hispanic community, their families, into the education process, because this has shown a tremendous statistical correlation with achievement. So preschool and families are two places we need to focus on. And I think we can then be pretty successful.
Let's see. Started with you. I'm going to start with you, Kathy, here. The superintendent implemented a new testing system, Galileo. Teachers tell me in core subjects at the secondary level, 10% of teaching time is taken by all standardized testing. This year, I've heard that almost a quarter of our students opted out of the SAGE testing. state mandated due to test fatigue. So would you align with the superintendent who says she leads with data or with, say, President Obama who says that, you know what, cut out the testing?
I think we need to take a close look at testing nationwide, but certainly in Utah and Park City too. Some of our tests are mandated by the state. We can opt out, but we can't change those test requirements. But districts also add lots of other testing requirements. I think we need to look closely at what data we actually use to make instructional decisions and use those tests and eliminate as much as we can. I do think kids spend too much time in testing. We've got a lot of data in the nation to show that. If that's taking time away from instruction, I think we need to get rid of what we don't use carefully to plan instruction.
Peter, how do you feel about testing?
I think we need to make consistent testing as part of the everyday tests that you take, or everyday quizzes, or the tests that you normally take in school. If we could rationalize those across the district by grade, then we could get rid of a lot of these high-stake tests. One thing about Galileo that I've heard, I don't have all the data yet, is that it doesn't correlate with the in-class tests. So kids are doing very well on their math tests in class, and then they take Galileo and they fail. So what purpose is it serving if we're not getting a good correlation there? Something's off.
And Andrew?
Yeah, look, I think it's an issue of time spent, both for the students and for the teachers. And I think if we can make that time spent more efficient, it's good for everyone. You know, for example, perhaps doing professional development for our teachers during those testing sessions. You know, I've spoken to a couple of teachers, and one of the ideas was, look, you know, why not use that time? Why not get in substitute proctors and use that time for our teachers to do professional development or other things when we have all day testing and that type of thing? I'm personally not a fan of extensive testing, but you know, there's research to show both ways. I think that the school work that people do with their teachers and you know, regular academics are much more reflective of performance than actual standardized tests. But you know, that said, as Kathy pointed out, a lot of them are mandated by the state, and it's not really our choice.
Okay. Real quick, before we get to the questions that you brought for one another, the superintendent's leadership has been called into question recently a couple of times now. Would you continue to support the superintendent in her current position, or do we need to relook at perhaps replacing our leadership when her contract comes due? Peter?
You know, the newspaper asked me the same question. I probably asked us all that same question recently. I have what's called cognitive dissonance, which means I've got two contradictory ideas in my head at the same time. I look at things that we've produced, like the learning plan, and I go, wow, this is a really well thought out, solid document. I don't know how much collaboration was used. I'd like to make sure I get the comments from all the other key members of the school system. But this is good stuff. And then I see this kind of broken management style where we lurch from crisis to crisis, and I don't understand how we could do something so good on the one hand and seem to be, you know, messing up so often on the other. And so I would say that's really where we have to focus. We have to focus on fixing process, knowing how to create consensus within a school community. I mean, you come in here, and I'm sure that Ember saw that, oh my God, we're not in the 21st century. But you have to create consensus within your organization and move it along to your vision. You can't just force these things.
Andrew?
I'm going to say that I don't think it's a very professional thing to speak about someone personally on the radio. I think Ember is a member of this community, and it's unfair to single her out, first of all, as an individual. It's an HR issue. I would never discuss an HR
issue. It's a board issue.
It is a board issue, and it's an HR issue within the board. And I don't think that singling her out as, you know, the sole person within the administration of all the people on the board and all the people in the administration is necessarily fair. There's a lot of people who make decisions and help implement them, including the five members of the board. And I also wouldn't criticize any of them on air. I mean, you know, we're talking about people who are giving a tremendous amount of their time and or careers to the education of our children. And I think it's disrespectful to speak poorly of them, even if we have negative opinions. And I think our community should be better than that. And it's, you know, it's kind of upset me, the negativity around the administration and, you know, especially around this election. And I, you know, I'm going to choose to decline to answer that, rightly or wrongly.
I agree that we have to be careful with respect in HR and school board issues. But that said, I think that anybody who comes in and shakes up a system, no matter what the system is going to face some hurdles. And Ember certainly has done that and has faced some hurdles. Those have made her somewhat unpopular. As I talk to educators in the community, principals and teachers, there certainly is some concerns about her style of management. But I hope that she's listening to those concerns and can change accordingly. I think she's only been here a couple of years. It really takes 2 to 3 years to get anything new started and settled well. So this next year will be very telling. If she's responsive to the educators and to the community and learns and it puts good things in place that start to show results, I think we have to honor her for that. If she can't listen and do the things that some of the community and educators want, then I think we have to reconsider. But that's the case with any new person that comes in and shakes things up.
Okay, Andrew, do you bring a question for a candidate you'd like to ask now?
Yeah, sure.
Let me get you closer here.
Sorry about that. So, question for both. What direct community involvement here in Park City have each of you had in the past couple of years related to education or our children? And that's recent experience. Thanks.
Kathy, you want to start?
Well, I clearly am somebody who has gone back and forth between Cash and Logan until last year, and now I'm at the state office working full-time, so I commute into the city. I'm greatly involved in education in the state. I have people here that I know well in education. I have not taught kids here. I have not raised kids here, but I am integrally involved in education.
Peter?
You know, long term, I'll start there. I was deeply involved in the schools, tutoring, working with teachers. Spent a great deal of time in the schools. Recently, I really became involved with the bond because that's when I saw that that things seemed to be going out of kilter, and I felt it was really important to jump in, do the research, find out what's wrong, and it's also the reason why I've gotten involved in this election because I love this school system. It was great for my kids, and I think I know where it needs to go to be better.
All right. Kathy, a question for candidates?
Sure.
Opponents, I should say.
Andrew, you stated that we need to aggressively raise salaries and provide housing stipends and grants for repaying student loans. Peter, you said that the top performing schools in the world based on international tests simply spend money more effectively. Yet unlike the U.S., the top performing countries in the world use a national curriculum, not just common standards, encourage the top third of their high school graduates to pursue education careers, and pay them wages similar to engineers, all with much less diversity than the U.S. While increasing teacher pay and using resources more effectively are great suggestions, how would you propose funding these suggestions and ameliorating the differences between the U.S. and other countries?
Well, I'll talk about Park City. I've lived abroad, and I'm very familiar with other, you know, educational systems in Europe and Asia. But what I'll talk about is here in Park City is that we have relatively low taxes for, for this type of community. And the majority of our people who are here have come from other places where they've experienced paying a lot higher taxes, and their expectations are very high for our education system. And, you know, I think they're pleasantly surprised when they get here about the tax situation. So, you know, it's a simple answer. One, you can raise bonds to pay for capital needs, and two, you can raise taxes to pay for operating costs. And, you know, we have a national teacher shortage. We have a teacher shortage in Utah. Last week, if you in the Trib, they wrote an article about, you know, now that the state school board is going to allow anyone with a bachelor's degree and who can pass a background check to become a teacher in our schools. To me, that means we have a teacher crisis. And I'm not comfortable with that. And to me, the biggest priority is to make sure that we're getting the best and brightest teachers to move here to our great community and to stay here. And it's a big issue. And, you know, I threw out a couple ideas, right, which are maybe reducing, you know, relieving some student loans for people who are highly indebted who want to move here, or providing housing stipends. I think those are, you know, good concepts. I'm interested in hearing more from the teachers about what they would want. But it's an issue, and we need to pay for it, and we have the ability to pay for it.
When we talk about paying more, though, Andrew, I mean, do we now see the number of free and reduced children go up as you we already have nearly a quarter of our kids unable to buy lunch for themselves. I mean, how are we expected to have their families pay for increased costs of education?
Well, look, I think, you know, a big deal of our tax base comes from second homeowners, first of all. And second of all, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, penalizing a certain, you know, percentage of our of our residents. I think the community as a whole can pay for this, right? There's creative ways to pay for it. The Education Foundation funds about a fifth of the discretionary budget, you know, annually. We have the ability to raise money outside of the traditional methods where, you know, there's equalization and things like that. And we just have to be creative as a community. We need to pay for teachers. If we don't, they will leave. That's the way it is, and we can't afford that. We have a we have great teachers, we have great parents, we have a good district. Maybe we need to treat we do need to tweak some things, but we have a very good base. And I'm excited about it, but you know, we do have to spend money to play, and that's the reality here.
Peter, do you want to add to that?
Sure.
In terms of the funding question.
There are a lot of things you can do that other countries do, and there's even some stuff on the learning plan that does not take more money. It's about managing your resources. For instance, even in the elementary grades, we talk about how difficult it is for teachers to teach math. Should we be thinking about, in those upper elementary grades, specialty teachers? That's what they do in Shanghai, China, which came out of nowhere to be the top performing school district in the world. The other thing that you see Finland and China doing, and it's also on the Learning Center, it's called micro-teaching. It's where teachers undergo a constant improvement through peer-to-peer evaluation so that they're always improving their lesson plans within the classroom, because that's what's critical. And it's what goes on inside those four walls every day. And there are management methods that can make that much better that are not more money.
Okay. Your question to the candidates, opponents?
I was just concerned. I mean, it's unfortunate, but being a school board member is now looking more and more like a full-time job. I mean, you have 9 a.m. meetings, you have 6 p.m. meetings, you have committee responsibilities, closed-door sessions, and if you're really going to be good, you have a lot of materials to absorb, and you have to meet with your constituents and hopefully manage by walking around and understand what's going on within the schools. You know, when we tried to put this interview together, it took like a week of negotiations, and everybody had different schedules running around. And are you going to have the time in terms of changing your work schedules to put in the effort and the time that unfortunately it takes now to be a responsible member of our school team?
Kathy?
Good question. So the reason that it was hard to pull this together is partly due to vacations and other things that were pre-planned, and so those weren't changeable. I work full time. My job obligation is 40 hours a week. I typically work 60 to 80 hours a week, and so I'm dropping other things to be on the school board. I can be at the school board meetings. Evenings are never a problem because I'm done early in the afternoon, and I don't see it being a problem for me to be doing research, meeting with other committees and stuff around my job obligations. So I think it's a very workable situation.
And for you, Andrew?
Yeah, I own my own business, which gives me, you know, the unique flexibility to set my own hours. And my business is also focused around Asia, which means that the majority of my work is done at night. So, you know, I have no issue at all. I spend a lot of time already, you know, working on nonprofits here in Park City, and I'm around all the time. And I've structured my life to do that. So it's not an issue for me at all. In fact, I probably have as much time as someone who would be retired to focus on this.
Okay. Well, let's get to the closing statements. I'd ask for like 30 seconds. Let's just go down the line here, starting with you, Kathy.
Okay, I moved to Park City full-time last summer, but I've been voting in Park City for the last 4 years and have been paying close attention to the issue since I declared my residency here 5 years ago. I bring an educator's perspective to the school board and believe it's important to have at least one educator on the school board. I understand the uniqueness of Park City, which is why I live here, and the issues facing education here and in our state. I hope Park City voters turn out in large numbers and choose to retain an educator on the school board. I will strive to represent you well, hear your concerns, and bring my broad perspectives as a parent, a STEM professional, small business owner, and educator to the school board.
Peter?
Right. Well, I'm the candidate who's been here 21 years, and if you have a child in any grade, I know what you're experiencing because my two kids went through the entire school system. I love this school system. I love this town. I know the people who work in this community. We've talked about all kinds of things, and I think that a lot of our solutions are going to be based upon collaboration with the broader community. And I know these people, everything from the people that run the Mountain Lands Housing Trust, to the commissioners and the city councilors. And I think I'm the one who can create a community consensus and make these schools work.
Andrew.
Sure. You know, I think this year's election should be one that selects the best candidate to serve our district's family for the next 4 years, and not simply a referendum on past decisions. I think to strike down everything that's been done in the past is only going to penalize our children in the future. And as a community, we should direct our enthusiasm and passion for the good of Park City's kids. We should move past the contentious arguments and put our students and teachers first and move forward. I have more info. I have a Facebook page. It's Andrew for School Board. You can find me on there, and you know my phone number and email are there if you want to ask me any specific questions. Thanks.
All right. Kathy Kellohuser, Peter Yogman, Andrew Kaplan, the community would be lucky to have any of you. So good luck, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's volleyball courts.